Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche, and I'm your host, JV. In this show, my co-host, James Tape Leg Graylian from the Rink Podcast, and I talk about Gabriel Landeskog's Colorado push, Ryan O'Reilly's broken face. We mentioned Matt Hunwick in a positive light. Who would have thought that about 50 games ago? We give Greg Sherman plenty of credit for his moves that he made at the deadline, and we have numbers that will let you know that Joe Sakic was even more clutch than you ever thought. All those topics and a whole lot more Avalanche stuff coming at you in episode number 72 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Stick around. James and I will be right back. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche. And I'm your host, Jay Veen. Joined, as always, by my buddy from the Rink Podcast, James Tape Leg Graylian. Hi, James. Good morning.
Morning. I am fired up. Let's do this thing.
How you feeling from last night? I know you caught some of the third, caught the overtime. Everything going okay? Here, I'll let you ponder that, because I know you're a man of many words. Real quick,
I'm fired up. I am so fired up.
Aren't we all?
Overtime loss to the Vancouver Canucks. Never seen that happen before.
No. This year's not been one of the better years for the Avalanche against the Canucks. That's for sure. Let's get to the important stuff first. This is episode number 72 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. You're home for almost everything Avalanche. This is the Joel Chouinard 2009-2010. Chouinard. Don't mess with his name.
Chouinard.
No.
Sherman.
Could be. Maybe someday. I don't know. But he has a game-issue jersey that they made for him to wear during the 2009-2010 season. We're getting into the numbers now where we have to get pretty obscure. So this is a game issue jersey. I'll post the picture. Compliments of mygray.com. He's a 6'1", 186-pound defenseman. Playing in Lake Erie right now. 10 assists, 51 games. Well, probably a few more games played now in Lake Erie. 10 assists, at least when I typed that. 2008 draft pick of the Avalanche, 167th pick overall. Thank you, Avalanche DB and Hockey DB, for your stats. We always like those. Well, deep thoughts on Joel Chouinard, James?
I remember when I saw, I have no idea who he is.
All right.
If we had Jory 5280, if we had Angelique from the Colorado Avalanche Prospects blog, she wouldn't know who that was.
She would totally know who that was, and we should just have her on just for that purpose. But I got to see her last night. It was so nice seeing her. Jory, as always, it's a pleasure. So, yeah, speaking of last night, ouch. Let's cover, since our last show, real quick. The Avalanche are 7-4 and 2 overtime losses since our last show. Last night they lose to the Canucks in overtime. Just a killer, because the Avalanche looked so good early. The place was rocking, almost a sellout. The Avalanche, you know, take the 2-0 lead, and just within a minute and a half in the second period, and it's just Canucks pace the whole rest of the time. The Avalanche are now 7-13-2 within the division on the season, and that's kind of where we are. James, thoughts on last night?
I came into the game kind of late. Really appreciated Steve Downey taking on pretty much everybody that was on the ice for the Canucks. But that was the end of a game where you really need the 2 points. And who cares if the Avalanche win in overtime? Give the Canucks as many points as they want. Who cares? They've won the division. They would have won the division anyways. It's fine. But the Avalanche needed those 2 points. And what happened at the end was just brutal. I was watching at home on my computer here in New Orleans, my temporary home for another few weeks, and all I could do was yell, damn it, Barry, over and over and over.
And he looked so good last night. You know, Matt Duchene had a giveaway just before Barry's as well that could have turned into the game winner too. Mm-hmm. I definitely have Tyson Barry's back, and I think anybody who watched last night's game, I earned a lot of respect for him. It's a big game. The Avalanche need the 2 points. He's a young guy. He hasn't played in that many games for the Avalanche, but ever since Eric Johnson's back went bad, he's been in there, and he looked fantastic last night, except for maybe getting a little tired at the end. He's out there quarterbacking the point on the power play, paired with, you know, either Matt Duchene or Ryan O'Reilly, and I was impressed with Barry last night, obviously, mm-hmm. in the overtime. It looked like the team was just playing not to lose. They were just kind of sitting back and waiting for the game to come to them, and that's exactly what the Canucks wanted them to do, and that's what was disappointing about it. It was just the Avalanche looked so good, but, man, Roberto Luongo, too, he was solid. And earlier in the game, the Avalanche take the 2-0 lead. The Avalanche should have been up probably at least 2 by the end of the first period, but Roberto Luongo, again, just solid enough to help his team hang around. And the first period was played on the Avalanche's pace, and the second, third, and overtime were played at the Canucks' pace, and that's all you need to know about that. Mm. So I hear you about Barry. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, it was that last play where Barry is between, you know, the puck is coming into the Avalanche zone. Barry is between the Canucks attacker and the boards. He's between the puck and the Canucks player. He looks back over his shoulder to see where the Canucks player is. No problem. Looks back again. No problem. Gets within 5 feet of the boards. Looks again. Loses track of the puck. Gets lit up and can't make a play on the puck because he now has no idea where the puck is. Puck gets taken away from him. Centered. Fired past Varlamov. You can complain about whoever was trying, you know, was quote unquote supposed to pick up the guy who was coming into the zone behind, but obviously without, you know, can't no obstruction, no interference. So there's only so much you can do. But when you are that on that puck and you are supposed to be strong on that puck at that point, and you're looking back and you're looking back and you're looking back and you lose track of that puck, that's the kind of thing that happens and leads to goals. And I'm sure he's going to be watching a lot of video of that for a couple days.
He said something to the effect of that's on me, you know, and I don't know. The Avalanche let their guard down for just a little bit in the second period, but I would say overall, like I said, just the pace of the game really favored the young speedy Avalanche team, and then the rest of the game the Canucks just slowed it down, and just when they needed Luongo to make a save, he did, and that's how it works sometimes in the NHL, especially for young teams. So hopefully, you know, as a young team, they're going to learn, and I don't think you'll see Barry make that mistake again.
No.
I would just like to say that, but we'll have to see. So,
well, and ouch. Let's be honest here that if this were another part of the season, if the Avalanche had played a little stronger in previous months, if they had played the way that they're playing right now in this part of the season in previous months, they wouldn't be in this situation where that single point, that costly overtime loss, would cost as much. As much as Barry may have made that mistake, there's a reason that the Avs are in this position, and it isn't just one game.
Absolutely.
And it isn't just one little mistake, or it isn't just one overtime, you know, one time when you get 1 point when you could have maybe gotten two. This is Barry's mistake may look glaring right now, and as much as I want to look at it and go, damn it, why, there's a reason that it would be great if they weren't in this position. Other teams, they've put themselves in this position right at the very end of the season. So. Yeah,
and that's just this time of year. That's how it works. But we can go back to the 2-0 loss at home to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who were last in the league at that point. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we can go back and go ahead and choose 4 or 5 games where they either should have gotten 2 and got 1 or should have gotten 1 and got none. But they've had a couple, too, where Jamie McGinn scores with 1.2 seconds left on the clock to earn 1 point against the Sabres, and then they go ahead and win the game. So you can go back and break it down that way. A lot of people, though, let's talk a little bit about the officiating. The Avalanche, interesting fact from Mile High Hockey on Twitter, who was doing some interesting, research. That's at MHH for those of you that don't follow them yet. Big Avalanche resource for you there. They said in the Avalanche's 15 previous seasons, the opposition had played 6 perfect games. And by perfect game, I mean the Avalanche earned or had received 0 penalties, no power plays. This year, there has been 6 games where the Avalanche have not had a penalty, a chance to score a power play goal. One example, I don't think, you know, I think they did have a power play. No, actually they didn't. So which game was it where Ryan O'Reilly got his nose broken? Was that, it was just a couple
of games against the Calgary Flames.
Against the Flames, and the Flames had not had, that was one of the perfect games, and it just kind of magnified what everybody was talking about. But Ryan O'Reilly, you know, gets a centering pass in the slot, fires it up above Kiprusoff, it hits the crossbar, and about at the same time, I believe it was Mark Giordano's stick comes up and hits O'Reilly right in the bridge of the nose, and it breaks it, and he's bleeding all over the ice, and there's no call. An interesting thing. So what's your take on the officiating, maybe even specifically that play?
Well, with that play, it's hard to look at. It's very easy for us to, obviously, and everybody's talked about this before, that you can sit in the sofa, get the slow-mo replay. By the third time, we all know what the penalty was, what it should have been called, blah, blah, blah. But looking at it from the ref's perspective, the down low, Ryan O'Reilly takes a shot.
The ref was working hard down low, right?
Of course, but as soon as Ryan O'Reilly takes the shot, that ref's job is going to be goal or no goal. That's going to be his first primary instinct. So he's going to look at the net, not at Ryan O'Reilly anymore. He needs to see if it's no goal. And as soon as it hit the crossbar, you see the ref washing out that it's no goal. So he's doing his job. He's not looking at Ryan O'Reilly for any kind of penalty, because that's not what his main concern is now. Now it's a goal. So you go to the back ref. And the back ref, obviously, Ryan O'Reilly has his back to that ref. And so the back ref probably isn't going to see that the stick came up enough to get into the guy's face, or into Ryan O'Reilly's face. At that point, I believe it was Peter McNabb that also said, well, Ryan O'Reilly was going down on one knee when he took that shot, so it wasn't like the stick was coming up over the shoulders, you know, a super high stick or anything like that. So maybe that factored into things. But my instinct is just that even while we have all of these camera angles, the refs are looking for something else too, and they can't always be exactly where every stick infraction is, where every potential problem is going to be, where every potential penalty is going to be. Even though I don't think it's a good call necessarily, you know, to miss that, I can understand how it could have gotten missed.
I think the X factor here in this whole situation is the crossbar too. I think that ping, and especially the time of the game this was, I think that really threw everybody for a loop. Even the linesman can, if they see enough of it, can say, hey, that was a high stick, and they can fix that call. I've seen that happen. It's really cool when they get it right. And for the most part, there are those situations, and you bring it up all the time as far as slow-mo. It's easy for us to, you know, to be slow-mo referees. I mean, that's a simple thing. And I know those officials got an earful on that one. I'm sure the league talked to them and said, hey, what did you see here and what was going on there? But I think the crossbar threw it all off. Because once they hear crossbar, someone's got to go. One of the officials has to find the puck. Another's looking to see if it went in. Another's, you know, I don't know. But there was a lot going into that. But the other thing that comes up is that people will start to blame the officials and the non-calls and maybe some of the calls that the Avalanche got as a reason as to why the Avalanche didn't make the playoffs. And just to let you know right now, if you're looking for James and I to do that at the end of the year, whenever that may be, as far as whether it's within the next couple games or the Avalanche get some breaks and they're in the playoffs or really close or not, I'm never one to blame the officials for a win or a loss. This is just all part of the game. And if you work hard enough and you work hard enough for your breaks, any good or bad call by the officials isn't going to matter. And throughout the season, these calls even out, and that's how it goes. So I thought that was a really interesting play, and a lot of people started doing their homework, including Mile High Hockey, on how weird this season has been. And it has been strange. But you got to earn your power plays. And the Avalanche have had a little over 2 minutes of 5-on-3 action the entire season, but you have to earn that. And this team will learn how to earn more penalties, or learn how to, I guess, draw more penalties. And that time obviously isn't quite right now.
And one of the things you brought up was the linesman talking it over. After the lockout, the powers of the linesman and how much they're allowed to talk about things that aren't just calling the lines were, after the lockout, it was severely diminished. They were pretty much told, you're going to stick to the lines, too many men on the ice watching for change, you know, for line changes, but we want you to call this. We want you to call the lines. We want you to call offsides. We want you to call icing. Stick to that and let the refs do what the refs do. And that was a big shift. There used to be a lot more communication, and that was severely curtailed. So there is, just like plays that are reviewable versus plays that aren't reviewable, how much the linesman can get involved with that is also part of the standard of the NHL. And most linesmen are not going to break that standard just to say, hey, he did get high-sticked here. That should have been a call.
It may be one of those respect things as well, to where the official would need to go to the linesman and say, did you see anything? Rather than in the older days where the linesman can go specifically to the referee and say, hey, here's what I saw. So, like I said, I think the crossbar threw the whole thing off, because it took me a replay or two to really see exactly what happened, because you hear the ping basically at about the same time O'Reilly catches one right off his beak. And, you know, I don't know. There was a couple different things you needed to focus on, and nobody saw what they needed to. But it all worked out. David Jones scores his fifth career overtime game winner. Is that what it is? Yeah, there you go. So David Jones scores his fifth overtime game winner that night against the Flames. Franchise leaders in this stat, Milan Hayduk has 9 regulation overtime game winners, Joe Sakic with 7, and David Jones with 5. So, you know, you have the Peter Forsbergs and the Chris Drurys and the clutch guys that score big goals for the Avalanche, and David Jones is now third on the Avalanche franchise list for overtime game winners, which is pretty impressive. I didn't expect to see him on that list. But one more interesting stat, James and I were talking about this before the show. Joe Sakic has 7 regulation overtime game winners during regular season. For those of you that know Joe Sakic, well, he has 8 overtime game-winning playoff goals in his career. That means he has more overtime game-winning goals in the playoffs than he does in all the overtime games that he played in during the regular season. And that, boys and girls, is what you call clutch. That's a crazy number. I just blew James's mind.
Yeah, I hardly even understand that stat at that point. Just, how do you do that? How do you have so many more overtime game winner goal? One more, but we're still talking in single digits. So the scale is pretty loose there, and that's phenomenal.
That's awesome. That's all kinds of awesome. Can I say that? Like anybody needs to know more about how much I love Joe Sakic. There you go. I saw that number. And they didn't bring up overtime game winners when they were talking about that stat. They just put up the, you know, altitude, put up the Hayduk, Sakic, Jones numbers, and then I went, you know, Sakic's got 8 in the playoffs just when he was with the Avalanche. It's awesome. Makes me happy. Speaking of happy, and speaking of studs, let's talk about Gabriel Landeskog. James, tell me what you think about Gabriel Landeskog, and be nice or I'll hang up the phone.
Give him the Calder Trophy. It's done. It's sewn up.
Nice. He's been outstanding. He's worth every bit of the struggle that was last season. I will go ahead and say that, at least for me. I mean, the second half of last season was a pretty big embarrassment, but Landeskog has been phenomenal. He makes you doubt Matt Duchene's ability just a little bit, and that's not an easy thing to do. All right, how do you feel when I say that? Are you cool with that?
I'm pretty cool with that. I think that he's got a little more overall game than Matt Duchene does right now. We've talked about what we feel that Matt Duchene's shortcomings are. And while Landeskog isn't fancy, he sure does a good job. He works hard down low.
He does.
He's taking it to another player or to another level. And he really is playing like a guy who's been in this league for years rather than somebody who just showed up. Matt Duchene, he still sometimes plays like he's a junior player, kind of like, kind of like Shattenkirk was still playing like he was a like he was still in college when he was with the Avalanche. And they were brand, you know, both of them new to the league, didn't have that time in the minors. But Landeskog seems like there's been no transition at all from where he was before to the NHL.
And no rookie wall either. No, mm-hmm. you know, 50, 60 games into it. Well, that would have been the end of his junior season or whatever season. Man, he's really hit a wall. No wall. He's actually even gotten a little bit better. He's the only rookie leading. I mean, he's played in every game, which could have been tested on March 12th against the Ducks, where he misses the morning skate. That's the thing. Landy's questionable. He missed the morning skate. He's got the flu. He comes out as obviously not even close to 100%, and then he scores the game winner in overtime. And mm-hmm. that's outstanding. Then he has a great performance the next night on national TV as well. These were both on NBC Sports Network. Got back-to-back games with Pierre McGuire. That was really fantastic right there. But he comes out and has another strong game.
And he tried to take away the mantle from Tim Tebow and start Landeskogging.
Yeah, he did. After his goal, that was just so cool. I think if you wouldn't have known how sick he was, I don't think that would have been as big of a deal. If nobody had mentioned it, they would have just, you know, but he was that exhausted. You could tell he was off. He's played so well, so, you know, for the whole year, you knew he wasn't quite right, but he comes back and scores the game winner. It was fantastic in front of the national audience. They had been, you know, drooling over him the whole game. And I don't know, man, the kid can flat play the game. I'm so excited to watch him and hopefully many years to come. I've got a couple articles that I will post along with this podcast. So make sure you check out the website. If you just get our show on iTunes, make sure you go to, abshockeypodcast.com. There's a bunch of links that you'll get there too. He's been great. And actually that setup, while we're speaking of that goal against the Ducks on March 12th for the overtime game winner, Matt Hunwick had a big part in that. And if I thought we were going to mention Matt Hunwick for anything but blame Hunwick on Twitter, thank you, Randy Kroger, for that. If you would have told me that 25 games ago, I would have told you were absolutely crazy. But Matt Hunwick has stepped up his game, and I definitely appreciate what he brings to this team now. I'm just sad it took so long to get to this point.
Yeah, you've been actually, I've seen you on Twitter praising his skating ability lately.
God, the guy, if you keep watching him and you see the type of, he isn't your best player positionally, and that's why he didn't play most of the year, and that's why he's been scratched, I think, healthy scratch, like 44, 45 games a season. But his speed makes up for so much of a lack of anything he has. I mean, it's amazing to watch this guy move up and down the ice. And, you know, I watched Landeskog make a few breaks early in the year, and we've seen Duchesne's speed and everything like that. And I asked Mark Moser, I said, hey, who is the fastest guy? Is it Landeskog? Is it Duchesne? He says, it's not even close. Matt Hunwick is the fastest skater on this Avalanche team. And I was like, man. Huh, I wonder why he's not playing. But, I mean, he's been a big part of this Avalanche's run towards the playoffs. Ever since the Avalanche, made the moves that they did at the trade deadline and moved Kyle Quincy, I thought the Avalanche were in trouble having to play a Tyson Barrie or a Stefan Elliott or Matt Hunwick. But man, it's worked out pretty well. I have to give him a lot of credit. He's been great. He scored 3 goals in his past, I think, 16 or 17 games. I mean, that's fantastic for a guy that has every reason to hang his head and say, screw you guys, I'm sick of sitting this often when I'm healthy and you're bringing up these rookies and they're playing ahead of me, forget it. But he's been great. He's taken great advantage of his opportunities, and you got to give him credit for that.
Well, another guy that deserves credit, and perennial whipping boy, Semyon Varlamov. And this is a guy who was basically, the Avs were thinking, he's washed up, he's done, he's now the backup officially. And he's getting start after start. He's keeping the Avs in games. He's making clutch saves. He's made a few brilliant saves in there. And
he's working hard down low. Wait, Varley can't work hard down low, can he?
I think that's the fifth time we've said that this podcast.
Well, I haven't said that's what she said yet. So we got to go working hard down low. You know, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Varley's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. And he's uncanny in shootouts. 8-0 in shootouts. He stopped 22 of 24 shootout opportunities by the opposition. Wow. Well, they might have missed a few of those. I know there was a couple posts mixed in there too. But 2 goals on 24 shootout chances by the opposition. That's crazy. And before a couple games ago, he had that 10-2 stretch. He's kept the Avalanche in it, and he and Jiggy have been great. And I think they've really shown what Peter. Well, I mean, if I say Peter Budaj, how long does it feel since Peter Budaj played in an Avalanche uniform?
Yeah, it hasn't been that long, and it feels like forever. And
I like 3 seasons.
Saw him last night playing a little bit, and I was surprised. I saw him in net. I thought, oh man, there's that guy who I can barely remember.
That's right. It's the new reality has kind of taken over, let's talk about, unless you have more about Varley, let's talk about Greg Sherman. Let's talk about the scouting department. Let's talk about the moves that have been made, because you just have to give them all kinds of credit. I mean, Greg Sherman was a whipping boy for a long time, but people can argue the biggest and best move at the trade deadline was that, although Daniel Winnick scored again last night, jerk. So now he's got two goals in his last two games when he hadn't had one for 44 straight. So he's heating up. But TJ Gagliardi's being TJ Gagliardi. I mean, it could have been the best move, especially with Michael Scabies, right? That's his name? Scabies? Scarbosa?
Scarbosa?
But I mean, Scarbosa wins the Ontario Hockey League scoring championship, and he could be, you know, a great thing too. But these acquisitions and the scouting department and Greg Sherman, you can say the Jamie McGinn move was the best move of the trading deadline.
Absolutely. Once the Sharks lost Jamie McGinn, their goal production, I believe, it went from 3 goals a game to 1.5 goals a game. And sure, when it got 2 goals, great. Well, Jamie McGinn has gotten 8 goals with the Avs, 4 assists for 12 points. That's phenomenal. You never know how a guy's going to necessarily work out. It's in the locker room, and he's working out great. There's no problems at all. And you're right. Sherman was the whipping boy. And who knows if maybe next year things don't work out as great, maybe everybody will go back to calling him crazy. I thought he was nuts for the Steve Downey move. The Steve Downey move's worked out great. Downey's got 2 goals and 11 assists in 16 games. I'm happy it worked out. I'm happy I was wrong about Downey. Very happy.
Yeah, it's been quite the ride. Downey brings that edge, and he's everything that everybody said he was going to be, plus a little bit more. Nobody likes him. I noticed early in the game, he and Bieksa were kind of, you know, very, very, it was kind of on the down low. It was kind of off to the side, but Downey kind of skates by Bieksa. Bieksa fakes like he's kind of spinning around and taps him very lightly on the back with a stick. And that's how it all started. Things got kind of nasty last night, and Mark Olver and Steve Downey are the ones right in the middle of everything, and that was fun. It was definitely an interdivision game, and we'll see how Wednesday night against the Canucks goes as well. But I have to give a lot of credit. We're running out of people to blame between Hunwick, between Sherman. Sacco may be another one where we'll have to address that after the season and see if they want to re-sign him or go a different direction as far as leadership on the team. But it's been fun to watch this season as a whole. It's been way better than I thought it would be. I don't think anybody really thought that the Avalanche would be where they are this year. You know, as close as they are to the playoffs and playing as well, they've been very streaky, which has been really interesting to watch. They've had, you know, a 5-game win streak. They've had a couple like really long winning streaks. They've had a couple tough streaks, but overall it's been an entertaining and fun and just more of a solid NHL season to watch than especially last year, because that one,
absolutely,
yeah, that one was rough. But I have to give Sherman credit. He's done well, and he's definitely at least bought himself some time. I know Joe Sacco bought himself some time with his Jack Adams nomination his first year when the Avalanche made the playoffs, and we'll see how that all works out at the end of the year. But yeah, Jamie McGinn, man, that goal. Did you get a chance to see the replay of the goal last night? The Varlamov to Stastny to McGinn that gave the Avalanche a 2-0 lead. Did you see that one?
I did. That was a beautiful pass by Varlamov.
Holy cow, that was right on. I mean, that was 100. The rink's what, 200 feet long?
Mm-hmm.
That was 150 feet then, right around in there. I mean, right on the stick. I mean, that was tic-tac-toe 200 feet right there. That was fantastic. But
and imagine that had the fans gotten their way, or had the Board of Governors meeting gone slightly different recently, that kind of play would be illegal because they were trying to put back in the red line for the 2-line pass. And that's right. That wouldn't have sailed.
Yeah, definitely not. But that was pretty, very exciting. Made it that much more disappointing when the Canucks come back, and then I'll get sad again. And oh well. So all right, what else we got here? Anything else?
Hey, last night's game, by the way, Peter Mueller was a healthy scratch. How nice was that to actually have him as being a healthy scratch rather than a healthy one?
Mueller. Yeah. Really struggling.
And also, like, Eric Johnson, of course, was out last night. I believe it was his second game in a row.
It was the third game in a row, I believe, with his back issue. And this team is better with Eric Johnson. Again, another whipping boy, another somebody that a lot of people would have brought up, including myself, saying, man, he's struggling, but he's not anymore. He's gotten better, but he was
the Brett Clark for a little while there when Brett Clark was struggling. He was almost Matt Hunwick when the puck would go in, and and the camera would zoom out, and there would be EJ looking straight up like, here we go again. That's just the way it is sometimes. But he was struggling. I don't think that anybody, like, if somebody were to say, well, you know, he's been great, what's the problem with EJ? I'd roll the tape back 60 games and say, well, this was the problem.
Absolutely. And it's not anymore. So, I mean, it's kind of fun just to watch the team grow up and kind of figure out its identity, figure out what they're good at and what they're not. And things have definitely gone better. Peter Mueller, healthy scratch last night. Chuck Kobusu in for him. Picks up a charging penalty, which I was like, well, it could have been a few things, but it was definitely not a charge. Kobusu was just trying to create some energy. And then I really didn't notice him the rest of the game. I don't even know how much he was out there, but, you know, it's been fun. Mark Olvers is getting pretty entertaining to watch because he brings a little bit of he brings just enough effort, just enough skill on the offensive end to create some chances. But then whenever he gets a chance to get in somebody's face, he's a little guy, but he's definitely mighty. He's not scared of anybody, and he will get right up in you know, the scrums around. And it's been fun to watch him grow up a little bit too. So The team is definitely moving in a good direction. So that's why, even if they don't make the playoffs, it's not necessarily a bad thing. This is all great experience. They're able to play in some games that really truly matter, and they're going to be better for it in the end, depending on the type of things they like to do in the off season. And we'll have you covered here for that as well. So it's been a good year. I'm getting to the point where I'd have to say it's a success whether they make it to the playoffs or not, and I'm fine with that. You know, it's been fun to watch. So
yeah, a couple months ago I thought there's no reason to make the playoffs at all. Yeah. They're going to get embarrassed. They're going to get dropped right out. And right now they're playing more like it's playoff hockey. All the games are starting to look more like playoff hockey as these fights come in for the last couple of slots. But now I'm thinking, well, even though they may not be a real cup contender at this point, they don't look nearly as good as, let's say, the Penguins do right now. The St. Louis Blues, as odd as it feels to say, they don't look nearly as good as they do right now. But at the same time, I'd love to see these guys get some experience, get some playoff experience, because the core of this team is going to be around next year.
I would like to think so. I really would. And there's some big signings that the Avalanche especially O'Reilly, Duchesne, restricted free agents. It's time to spend some money. And I think there's no reason why they shouldn't. And I'm really curious to see how this offseason goes. But last night, I started last night with a tweet that said, you know, close to a playoff atmosphere. It's got a good feeling in the building. And by the end of the first period, it actually fell off by the end through the second, third, and overtime. But it did feel like a playoff game. And this is going to be good for these young guys, the youngest team in the league, lowest spending team in the league. I think the penalty differential is like they've had to kill like 120 more minutes than they've no what is it they've had to I don't know it's really lopsided. They haven't earned that many power plays and gotten that many calls either. Things are going to get better, and they're not that bad. So there's nothing to be, I think, sad or angry about, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes. So let's get into the Avalanche have five games left. They'll play Monday, March 26th against the Sharks at San Jose at 8:30. Wednesday the 28th at the Canucks. That'll be an 8 o'clock Mountain Time start. March 30th, the Friday, against the Flames at Calgary at 7. And then they have 5 days off, and that's where it's going to hurt. To where even if they win these next three, you're going to have to sit around and watch the teams around you catch up with their games in hand, and maybe I mean they're not free points, but they're just points. There's nothing you can do about. Then they play Thursday the 5th against the Blue Jackets at home at 7, and then they'll wrap up the season, hopefully not for good, but we'll see. Saturday, April 7th against the Predators at Pepsi Center as well. So, speaking of the Penguins, let's go back to this real quick, James. We had a pretty interesting conversation about the Penguins, and the Avalanche got smoked by the Penguins. This was March 3rd, just after our last show that we posted. But Adrian Dater had an interesting column about, and I tried to estimate how many Penguins fans were there at the game, and my best estimate was probably 5,000 to 6,000 Pens fans, and I'm not joking. I mean, it was crazy when they scored all their goals there. But Dater ripped the Pens fans apart, saying, act like you've been there, bandwagon fans, high-fiving people you don't know. He backed off a little bit then. You know, this is what the media does from time to time. They want to get people to their page, and he did that. But what, you know, I don't know if you watched that game, or I don't know whether you've been in similar situations, James, but what's the best way to cheer for your team when you're on the road, especially when you have 5,000 to 6,000 of your closest friends there and you're smashing the team, in the building that they're playing in? What did you have there? Cause I know you had some thoughts on what Dater said and how he said it. So what do you think about that?
I don't know. I think that Dater needs to realize that he has a perspective from putting on, you know, a polo shirt or suit and tie and going to the press box rather than sitting in the crowd, seeing your team at home maybe once a year. And I've seen plenty of road games. I've been to many road games. I've been to Avalanche road game, you know, Avalanche games on the road. I wear my Avs jersey, and I've been razzed by other fans and smile about it. It's fine. There's almost never been anybody who's been a big jerk about it, but also I'm not going to be a big jerk about it.
There's your key right there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it is. But if there's a guy with an Avs jersey, of course I'm going to gravitate to that guy in an away game. That's just the way it is. If I'm sitting near one, I'm going to high-five them. And here's the thing. When I'm at a game, if there's, you know, if there's some fun fans around and the Avs score a goal, I might high-five somebody I don't know at a home game. I don't see any problem with that. But
yeah, I agree.
The big
agree.
Problem for me with the whole thing was that Dater is trying to speak for the fans, or act like he's speaking for the fans, and he doesn't speak for the fans. First off, he's not a fan. He's a media guy. He doesn't sit with the fans. And second off, he's just the most visible guy. He's very visible because of his attitude, because of his writing, because of his style, but also because he's our only real beat writer. And well, of course he's going to rake people through the muck because that gets hits and that gets views and all of that. I think you should be respectful as an away fan, but I'm not everybody. I can't expect everybody to act the way that I do. That's not the way it works, and that's fine. I appreciate that he was upset, or that, you know, other fans were upset. Go to a Red Wings game. It's the same thing. And rarely do you call any Red Wings fans bandwagon fans. So
yeah, that's true. And it was crazy. And I really didn't have a big problem with how the Penguins fans were asking. I was a little embarrassed in the fact that there was that many Penguins fans there in the first place. Where are all the Avalanche fans? And then the mm-hmm. game after, I can't remember which game it was. I don't have the schedule in front of me. It doesn't matter right now. But I mean, I get there and it's just, oh, who was it? Because there just wasn't that many. I can't remember. But it was just Avalanche fans there. It was a team that doesn't have a lot of fans that travel with them, or a lot of people that live here now that used to root for the team or whatever. And then, you know, there was 7,000-8,000 people there, and it was quiet. And then Dater all of a sudden jumps on the fans and says, where are all the fans? I'm tired of sticking up for the fans in this hockey market. So then he tries to rile up the Avalanche fans to get the conversation going and to get hits. And I agree with you. I cheer the same way you do. I'm not there to cause problems. I'm not there to drink and get crazy. I'm there to root on my team. And if that includes a couple respectful high fives or a wave or a fist pound to somebody near me, that's cool. I get that. But then when he says, I'm done sticking up for these Avalanche fans, you know, I almost want to tweet back, which I would have before I realized that talking with him just really isn't worth it, to say, do you promise? You promise you're done sticking up for me? Because we don't need you to. But
I believe my tweet after he said that was, good, nobody asked you to. And
that's right. That's true.
Nobody did.
Yeah,
Who asked Adrian Dater to be there for us? What we really need is just, we need him to be a beat writer. We need better information. We need more than just, well, here's your starting goalie, enjoy. And and if you want to be sourpuss about it, fine, go be sourpuss about it. But don't act like we, the fans, are begging you to be our voice. We have podcasts, we have blogs, we have Twitter feeds. The fans can be their own voice.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why we do what we do. So thought I'd bring that up. It caused a lot of there was a lot of attention towards that. The Penguins fans were sticking up for themselves, which I don't mind. But I'm just hoping, and I think people who get it really do realize that Dater is the voice for himself and his what he does for his job, not for us as the fans. So,
and you know what? I guarantee you, had Sidney Crosby been drafted by the Colorado Avalanche, you'd see a lot more Avalanche jerseys everywhere around the country. It's just the way he's the best player in the league. He's been hyped up. Of course, they're going to be Pens fans everywhere. That's just the way it is. That's fine. There's no problem with that. There are Lakers fans everywhere for a reason.
There is. There's Denver Bronco fans everywhere for a reason as well. So,
And for that reason, you mean Peyton Manning, right?
Don't even get started with that. That's a whole nother podcast. Although, like, I need a reason to get excited about Bronco season. You know, a future Hall of Famer in a Bronco jersey. I like that. I know you're a huge football fan. You're a big baseball fan too, right?
What's a baseball?
Okay, moving on.
What's a ball? Right. Score the puck.
Yeah, you can't score the baseball. That's weird. All right. On a lighter note, McNabb's, that's what she said. So I only have a couple. He's really slowed down, but when he has them, they're always really beauties. McNabb's, that's what she said. Steve, regarding Steve Downey, he's not the biggest guy, but he can go. Let's see. Yeah. Hey-o, Shane Doan is a gigantic man. Whoa, dude. Do you have inside? Forget it. But also, this was my favorite. And when he said it, I was like, pure gold. We have Landeskog, who pounds everybody every night.
Wow.
Love it. Thank you, Peter McNabb, for the guess what's in my head game. And thank you, Mike Haynes, for the and bang. All right. James, should we do shout outs first, or should we do the where to find us? Let's do shout outs. All right. Yeah. Let's do. I have lots of shout outs. I have a fair amount. I want to thank Avs Fire, and I also want to thank Cat54000 for their feedback, for their comments that they left on iTunes. Those of you that left ratings on iTunes, thank you so much. It helps us feel better about ourselves when we see a lot of stars there, but it also helps people find the show. You know, when it says, you know, people are also listening to this, it helps people find the show. So thank you so much. And just a couple other shout outs, especially through Twitter. Andrika M, at 643 Cade. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Ben V, who just started listening to the show, he's from Colorado as well, said he was listening to the podcast for the first time and really enjoying it. So thank you. Cameron, I'm not sure how to say your last name. I think it's Ayer, from Las Vegas. Says he enjoys the podcast because he's a Displaced fan. So thank you for that. And also a long distance shout out to Marcel Klock. I believe that's how you say your last name, Marcel. He lives in Siegen, Germany. So we're going worldwide, James. He says he enjoys the podcast. He says the last one was awesome as usual. Thanks for your work and keep it up. So also a big shout out to our buddy in Northern California, Scott Yates, who actually admitted to listening to this show twice. That was something I smiled about, Scott, but it also makes me worry about you that you listen to our show more than once. I hope you have like some studying to do or something, man, but we really do appreciate it. I thought that was funny. So
if I remember correctly, he was actually cleaning his room.
He was cleaning his room and listening to a repeat of me and you and our podcast and you touching my iPad. So James is now in New Orleans. He can't touch my iPad, but he'll be back here soon and he can touch my iPad all he wants. Isn't that fun? And also, oh my you know, God,
that's a JV and that's what she said.
That's right. That's right. It keeps going and going. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Also wanted to shout out to, I think you saw it, James, my first little disagreement. I was having a problem with the Colorado Avs fan and a lot of people came to my back. I was doing all right on my own, but it was really cool to have people step up. So, thanks for your help. You guys know who you are on that. I appreciate that. Twitter 99% of the time is a great place, but sometimes it just gets kind of ugly and it did that time. But, just want to thank all of you for your help on that. Not absolutely necessary, but man, it sure is cool to know that people have your back when you need it. So, James, do you have any other shout outs?
My only shout out right now would be, Anthrax Jones, on Twitter, Anthrax Jones, cracking me up, making me laugh and, posting videos of Faith No More for me to watch, which, you know, I'll jump in there anytime.
That's winning. Yeah. If you Avalanche fans are not following Anthrax Jones and, I don't know. He also has a blog. He has some pregame, kind of teasers, kind of previews that you can read. It's just fantastic.
BadAltitudeHockey.blogspot.com. BadAltitudeHockey.
There you go. Follow our buddy Anthrax Jones. He is fantastic. He knows the game. He's a Penguins fan. Isn't that right, James?
I think he's just in Pittsburgh. I think he's just displaced. So.
Okay. All right. But yeah, check him out at Anthrax Jones on Twitter. You won't be sorry that you went that direction. He's fantastic. He's funny. He's witty, and he knows the game.
He's going to go to the console energy center to a Pens versus Avs game and high five everybody.
Yes, every single person there. It's going to be a fantastic thing. So,
gonna turn around, look at the press box, look at Adrian Dater, and go, "What? What?" That's what he's going to do.
Take that, you big galoot! All right. Hey, Dater's a big dude, man. I mean, he's really tall. He brings that up. So we don't mean to throw him.
We're going to throw 1930s insults at him.
Yes. You big. We'll have to look.
You haberdasher.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds mean. Yeah. All right. I say I'm going to do Where to Find Us on the internet every single show, and then James ends up doing it. So we're not going to change that up because James is fantastic at this. And I interrupted you through your entire spiel last time. I'll do my best to only interrupt you about three or four times this time.
I hate you. Right. You can always find the Avs Hockey Podcast at www.avshockeypodcast. You can comment on the episodes and the goofiness that you hear here. We put out plenty of links, videos, things that we talk about on this. And you can find even more stuff to chat about and chat with Jay more on the Facebook page. Fan page, which we have a link to on the site. You can find Jay on Twitter at Avs Hockey Podcast. That's AVSHKY Podcast. And also you can call us now and leave us any kind of message that you want, preferably something nice and flowery that we can actually put on the podcast. Nothing with a bunch of big swears. At 845-704-7465. That's 845-704-7465, and that's on the site also, as well as our favorite little goofy meme, curse word, which last night the Avs, of course, lots of curse words near the end.
They forced us to use it.
But if you like, you can pick up a shirt and it says curse word and show off exactly how you feel. Myself, you can find me on Twitter at tapeleg, TAPELEG. And my blog is at jerseysandhockeylove.com.
Thanks, James. That's always so cool when you do that.
I did a really poor job. I'm not feeling very well right now.
That's not a poor job. Yeah, we can't find it. I mean, we were going to do a show last week. I wasn't feeling well. Now James is getting sick. It's just one of those things. We'll be well eventually, and we'll be even better. How can that even happen? But just a shout out to everybody, man. This has been a great year, and we wouldn't do all this if we didn't get the comments and we didn't know people were listening. Even if you're just downloading it, we can see that. We can see that on our statistics, and it's good to know people are listening, and it's good to know that we're all a pretty cool community. So thanks so much. I'll gush over you guys, especially when the season is over, whenever that is. But I really appreciate it. We really appreciate everything you guys do, all the comments, all the likes, all the downloads, and everything else in between. So thanks for that. Without you, we definitely wouldn't do this. And if we did do it without you, it wouldn't be near as fun. So that's what she said. All right, absolutely. James, I hope you feel better. I'm looking forward to seeing you. We'll probably do one more show. And like I say, if you haven't listened to us much, our last show we did in person, James was in town. But right now, as James said earlier in the show, he's in New Orleans and I'm in Denver. So it sounds like we're next to each other, but we're not even close. So we have a lot more fun face to face. We can get each other sick and James can touch my iPad and all that stuff. But James, thanks. I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
All right, we'll come at you guys. We'll see how the rest goes. If the Avalanche don't make the playoffs, we'll take maybe a couple days, and then we'll come at you and sum up the season. I'm even thinking maybe a little something about Avalanche awards. We can have our own award show and do our own thing. I don't know. We'll make it interesting, and we'll break down the season for you. And if they do make the playoffs, we'll definitely give you a playoff preview, and we'll do our best to give you that. But until then, I don't know, 5 games left. They're going to need some help, and it's going to be an interesting end, but a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be, and that's good enough. So, all right, James, take care. I'll talk to you again soon, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, that's about it for episode number 72 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. You're home for everything Avalanche, the Joel Chouinard game issued in 2009-2010 jersey. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do for 73, but we'll figure it out. But until then, the Avalanche are going to need some help, like I said. But until then, keep cheering them on. So take care. Let's go, Avs. We'll see you guys next time on the Avs Hockey Podcast. See ya.